also always start with a little bit of news. Obviously, the big news was Rally Portugal at the weekend. Again, I'm going to go for some of the drives, I think, of the weekend. And slightly biased, I know. Chris Meek, I thought Chris Meek did a fantastic job at the weekend. I was really rooting for him to at least hold on to that podium. Obviously, he had a problem on the back of the car, by all accounts, and he just brought it home and got the points and did a very, very professional job. And obviously, Volkswagen back with pretty much a bang. But before we go into all that, and if you haven't been following us on Twitter, or if you haven't seen the stuff on Facebook, you will see tonight we're going to be joined by Elvin Evans' co-driver, which is Dan Barrett, and obviously they had a bit of a tough rally, I think is an understatement, and we're going to be hearing all from Dan anyway what went on there, and obviously his thoughts on the new Rally Portugal after the move as well. News as ever. Now, the big news that kind of came out, I suppose, with regards to Rally Portugal was the events that took place surrounding Biatelli, and who unfortunately had an accident, and some 4Ks, which is approximately 3 miles into Special Stakes 10, and basically he was left, and I don't know the full story. I've only got the press releases available on their Facebook page and on their website, so please go and check it out. But basically there's been outrage from rally fans across the world, really, that he was left unattended for a period of time, despite the fact that there was an off-duty medical officer on the scene who was encouraging the chief medical officer of the event to possibly send in an ambulance or something, and if that didn't happen, and basically he was left waiting for 3 hours 20 minutes, which is a shocking amount of time. And obviously he was suffering with head injuries and head injuries, i.e. dizziness and feeling sick and things like that, which is horrible. It's something I've suffered with in the past. But he was only 3 miles into the stage, so you've got to question whether something could have been done in some way or the other, considering, you know, it wasn't that far into the stage. But I'm sure more will come out about that. But the other thing as well, we got a reoccurring thing, I suppose, with Total Rally, the Skoda R5, which we got very, very excited about 5 or 6 weeks ago, and obviously it won on its debut, and this was his debut event at WRC level, and obviously they got a second and a third in WRC2 behind Nasser Al-Attiyah in NASA's regional rally car, which I always find fascinating, because I think I read something afterwards that NASA was going to use an R5 car for Poland, and the regional cars seem to be a hell of a lot tougher, and I know they use quite a lot over in the Middle East as well, and but he feels that possibly Poland he could go to an R5 car. It must be lovely to be in that position. But I'm sure the Skodas will be coming on even stronger again. You know, first time out, hell of a rough rally to debut a car. And obviously that's something which I'll be talking to Daniel about very, very shortly as well, because obviously M Sport, I think, had something in the region of 16 cars debuting on the event. Obviously they had the factory cars, and they had their customer cars out, and the DMAC Drive trophy with the new R2 car. And we were hoping to have Max Rattening join us this evening. Unfortunately, that didn't quite happen, but we were hoping to talk to Max about that. But we had Tom Cave on the other week, who'd obviously, he'd done the test in the car, and there was a certain positive vibe about the new car and everything else. And obviously Tom was leading the event throughout day one and day two, and he's had some issues and everything else, but Max drove a very, very strong event, and hopefully we'll get Max a little bit further down the line anyway. But just a couple of other bits of news as well. Again, another former guest of the show, and we've got ERC coming up very, very shortly, but we've been speaking to Richard Tuttle the other week, and Francois Delacour is confirmed for Ypres in the Porsche RGT, the 997 RGT, which I just think is just mega. I spoke about it on the show, and I think I nearly upset Richard, because I said I wasn't a massive fan of the whole Porsche thing going rallying, but I must admit I completely and utterly fell in love with it when I was on the Turini Monte Carlo. It just sounded just, don't even get me started, but just echoing through the valleys, absolutely stunning. But Fantastic. That, again, we were talking about now, that's the other thing that I wanted to come back to. The question tonight was with regards to the nicer stage ends. Now, obviously, Francois Delacour always had those steely eyes, the steely-eyed Frenchman and everything else. And that question was brought about by the interesting finish to the rally by Sébastien Ogier. And again, I'm sure everybody out there is fully aware of what Sébastien Ogier said. I like Sébastien Ogier, and the reason why I like Sébastien Ogier is because he speaks his mind on the spot. And you know, and sometimes I feel that motorsport and rallying and everything else has become perhaps a tad too sanitized now. Now, it was okay, it was, I agree, it was disrespectful, and I've read some comments on Twitter and things like that, but he's a passionate man. He was trying to make his point, and unfortunately there was a collateral damage almost for him to try and make his point to the FIA with regard to the running order and everything else. And I like somebody that is not scripted when they answer a question or they get involved in something, especially, you know, at stage end or at circuits or wherever it may be. You know, we're always crying out for personality, and you know, personality isn't necessarily always going to be somebody who you like or somebody you like what they're saying, but it's something different. It's not just, you know, the scripted answer and everything else. So I put it out there. I thought I'd kind of flip it on its head a little bit. And the nicer stage end comments, and I'm going to come back to those because there's been loads flying in, and there's been some comments with regards to some pulling on the heartstrings ones, and we're gonna do a bit of a roundup of those a little bit later on. And one thing I'm trying to get confirmation on at the moment, and if anybody can tweet it in, there was a series over in the UK for the Love of Cars, and Eric Carlson featured on it the other week when they were doing a Saab. Now, the programme put out a tweet earlier today to say that they've received reports that Eric had very sadly passed away, and I've been trying to get confirmation. If somebody can send us confirmation, you know, we don't want to be speaking out of turn, but you know, a very, very one of the men at the forefront of left foot braking, driving those little cars and keeping carrying speed through and everything else. And I hope it's wrong, but I've got a funny feeling that Channel 4 over here in the UK TV station wouldn't put out something like that. But anyway, thoughts to friends of Eric Carlson, and yeah, there you go. But anyway, listen, before we crack on, we're going to go for a very, very, very cheeky quick break, and then we're going to come back with the wonderful Mr. Dan Barrett.
Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group booking. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com.
Welcome back to Total Rally. Dan Barrett.
Good evening.
Dan, we'll start off, obviously, we'll start off with Portugal. Is it fair to say that's probably the toughest rally I think you've done?
Yeah, from a personal point of view, I think it was very tough. You know, we didn't have a fantastic weekend at all, a few problems along the way, but, you know, we've probably learnt a few lessons along the way as well. So,
yeah, I was just about to say, because, you know, obviously the lead up to it, the new car, the positivity around the new car was phenomenal, wasn't it? Obviously, you've been in both cars. How different does it feel?
Yeah, it definitely feels, you know, it's definitely a step forward. We were very unsure about how the car was actually going to be until we obviously put it into competition. For myself and Elvin, really, we're maybe still not 100% sure what the car can actually do fully, because we didn't really have a rally where we could string, you know, a full day's rallying together without a problem to really see what we could do with it. But, you know, that will come in time, so, you know, watch this space.
It was, as I say, you know, we watched the build up to it and everything else, and you know, there was, as I say, the the new car, we were speaking to Rich Milner very, very quickly, who's kind of our man on the ground at, in the service park, and he never gives much away when it comes to asking questions, but the noise of the car first and foremost was something that we'd never heard, and the gear cut, and Ryan got onto it the other week, and Ryan Champion said it sounds like a 97 Escort World Rally car, which was probably the most anorak type quote I think I've ever heard in my life.
No, the I think that for sure the sound, you know, you're not the first person to mention that. You know, I know for myself when we've been testing and things like that, the sound is different, and, you know, that's a good spectacle for, you know, the spectators watching at home. And for sure, when you sat in the car, the noise is also different. You know, I think it's just the different characteristic of the engine obviously gives a bit of a different noise.
Absolutely. I suppose I have to ask the question, at what point do you kind of, have you already had the kind of debrief, you've sat down, you've gone through everything, and you know what you've got to do now, or is that still to come?
No, we've had the debrief after the weekend. You know, it was just a small error really on Friday night, on Friday with the car, you know, a mechanical problem, which, you know, it was a part that had been transferred over really from the old evolution of the car, so it's not as if it was a new part that we hadn't used before. That unfortunately failed, and then on Saturday obviously we made the small mistake ourselves where we hit the rock and damaged the suspension. But yeah, we've been through all that with the team and me and Elvin ourselves really, and it's kind of all, you know, water under the bridge now. You know, we'll move forward, we've got a test next week in Sardinia, and then obviously straight on to the next one.
It's one of those things where I am slightly biased because obviously we've known each other a while. I've known Elvin for a while as well, and it was just that disappointment of obviously going from, it's like the highest high, isn't it? And I'll be honest, I know I spoke to you off air about this because we had the Rally Argentina show, and obviously we had Chris on, we had Paul on, then we had Elvin on. I couldn't get hold of yourself, and I was really conscious the fact that we hadn't had you on because we'd had Chris and Paul on at the same time. And now I feel kind of slightly bad because I'm getting you on because you've had probably the toughest rally of your life. So I apologise for that first and foremost.
Okay, no, it's the high, you know, it's like, I'm sure a lot of people can relate to this that are listening now, you know, the sport's very cruel. You can have the highest high 1 week and, you know, and then the week after you can be really down in the dumps, but, you know, you do remember the highs, and, you know, for sure me and Elvin will both remember that, and, you know, you tend to forget about the bad days pretty quickly.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Testing wise, now, is this obviously one thing you didn't get was stage mileage. How different does Elvin and Oit have their cars? You know, is there information you can get from, obviously because Oit did all the mileage, or, you know, how's it work?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, they're quite open. I think from the first sort of 4 or 5 months that we've been together as teammates, you know, there seems to be a really good relationship between both the drivers. They kind of both openly share the information that they've got, obviously, to try and, for the aim of, you know, making the car better for everybody. And it's the city would be the same with myself and Rag or the co-driver. You know, we're kind of getting on really well and sharing everything, and, you know, ultimately that's only going to drive everybody forward and, you know, hopefully get better results on back of it. I think, yes, maybe we've lost out a little bit of, you know, with mileage in Portugal, but, you know, there's a test next week before Sardinia, so we're going to get more time in the car then. So, you know, I'm sure by the time Sardinia comes and everything should be ready to go again.
Looking at Portugal and looking at the event now, I suppose, away from the physicalities of actually competing in it almost, the move back north, it seems to have been a resounding success. You were out on the stages, obviously recce'd them, you were out around the area and everything else. I think you've done Portugal before, haven't you, in juniors? What's your thoughts between the two?
And initially we were not, you know, we were quite sceptical really about moving forward up to the north of the country, because obviously no one had been for over 10 years and we didn't really know what to expect. But, you know, I would have to say that the organiser, Portugal, are probably one of the best, if not the best, in the whole championship. So they've managed to put on an equally good event, you know, 1,000 kilometres north of where they were before, with exactly the same standards that they had, you know, for the event in the south. You know, the way they kind of manage, probably, you know, I heard crazy figures of 800,000, a million people over like the 4 days. The way they manage those people for the competitors to not get stuck in traffic and things, you know, you've got to take your hat off to them. You know, they've done a fantastic job. And I think the stages, yeah, they are very different, but equally they're good. And I think, you know, stages like that have got a place in the championship for sure. second pass of the stages, you know, that is very rough. And I know a lot of people complained about that, but it's not the only rally that it's like that. It's just nature of, you know, the rally. It's no good if it's easy, if you know what I mean.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Well, I think we've gone from, you know, I think recently there's been sprint-style events almost. Even the gravel events have become kind of sprint-style events. And, you know, I remember years ago, and I had a couple of comments with regards to the similarities, but I think Greece was kind of statistically probably one of the slowest rallies in the World Championship. And there were certainly sections that I seen, and granted I was only watching, you know, TV and video footage and things like that, that there were some painfully slow sections that rally as well.
Yeah, there was, okay, we obviously didn't do an awful lot of the rally ourselves, but yes, there was some slow sections, but also there was, you know, some pretty fast sections as well. And I think they've got quite a good mix. One thing that we commented on the recce, after we'd recce between ourselves, was that there's not one stage on that rally that was like the other, which, you know, you have to say that's good, because, you know, each stage give a different challenge, whether it be rough, smooth, you know, fast or slow, and especially from the actual conditions of the, you know, the surface as well, that was very inconsistent with the level of grip. So I think you'd have to say that, you know, they put on a good rally, and, you know, I think there can be a few things they can improve on, but I think they've got a basis to be there for, you know, for quite a number of years.
Happy days. Well, listen, moving forward, obviously, I wish you the very best for Sardinia, but it's one of those, I've been asked, because obviously we put this out on Twitter, we always ask, you know, our listeners and stuff. One thing that has been put to us, and about, and I've got to ask all our guests tonight, and I completely understand if you don't want to comment, is with regards to the press release that was put out by Lorenzo
Bertelli.
I don't know whether you've got any thoughts on that you'd like to share or not, or...
I just think that it is a very... it's a very difficult situation really to comment on, because obviously I wasn't there at the time. I've only seen the press release, probably like yourself. You know, I've had contact with Lorenzo myself in the last 24 hours just to make sure he was actually all right after the accident, which, you know, he said he was. He made a recovery now and he felt good again. So that's the main thing. I think we just have to, you know, find the real reason as to why this would kind of happened, and, you know, to stop things like this happening again. I think there needs to be a structure in place really for all rallies, of protocol that they must use in circumstances that occur, you know. And I do feel, you know, as a current competitor, not just what happened at the weekend, but numerous things regarding safety, you know, there's not a standardised system really of what should and shouldn't happen. And I think really it's something that we're in talks with those, you know, a lot of people at the moment to try and get things improved. You know, the FIA and the organisers are making steps, but the steps are small and they take quite a long time to put into place. But, you know, all we can do is keep trying to get these things moving forward to hopefully make it safer and for everybody that's there, not just competitors, but, you know, spectators as well, because there's been a few issues this year with spectators, which, you know, we don't want to see. So, you know, we've got to keep striving to just make it better.
No, absolutely, absolutely. I think the other thing as well, what became it, obviously the spectator issue, and that goes without saying, but I think obviously the issue that Oit had as well, you know, going into water, and obviously the story behind, you know, the raising of the Titanic and everything else, while it was all a nice story, I think the seriousness of what was missed almost at times was the fact that, you know, the stage wasn't stopped right away.
Yeah.
And that's something that clearly needs to happen. So
yeah.
I think,
you know, this is kind of what I mean, you know, this it's not, there's not a standardised system, I feel, that actually works between each rally. You know, one rally would do one thing one way, the other rally would do it another way, and, you know, I think that needs to be clear amongst everybody, you know, what you should do in certain situations and the time frame that you actually have to operate on if and when these things actually happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's something that's not going to happen overnight, but there's a lot of people that are, I think, feel the same way as me. So being a current competitor, I think it's down to us to try and, you know, push these things forward.
Absolutely. Listen, Dan, as ever, mate, I appreciate you coming on. I'm sorry I didn't get you on when it was the celebratory bit, if you know what I mean, but you were unavailable at the time. But as ever, I really, really thank you for your time. Thanks for coming on Talk Rally tonight.
No problem.
All right, speak to you soon, Dan. Take care, mate.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And that, my friends, was Dan Barrett, and a very, very open and honest with regards to, I know it was put out on Twitter as well, that people wanted me to ask the question of some of our guests tonight of their thoughts, and I thought Dan was pretty much very, very open and honest on that one there. So we're going to go to, I think probably it's fair to say that I'm not at all going to trust Skype this evening. So if you can bear with me one second, I'm going to go to a very, very quick break, and I'm going to come back with the man that is Mr. Guy Wilkes.
Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate. We can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766 787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com.
Welcome back to Total Rally. While we're waiting for Guy, because last time he was desperately trying to sort out getting his salad out of the fridge. Well, welcome now to Total Rally.
Hello.
Guy Wilkes, welcome back to Total Rally.
Ah, Tony, how are you doing?
I'm all right, my mate. How are you?
Yeah, I'm fine, thanks.
That's all right, then. That's all right. Have you got your salad tonight?
No, I've just finished with pasta.
Your pasta, good lad.
Yeah.
Fighting fit. Now listen, we've broke protocol this evening to have you back. I hope you realise that.
Oh, right, okay. Why, what was protocol?
Protocol is that we are Total Rally, the clue's in the name.
Yeah, but you haven't finished your sentence, have you?
Ah, I see what you're doing there. Are you trying to make me cross?
Absolutely.
So no, we came up with a ruling the other week, is the fact that as you made your name in rallying, a bit like Petter Solberg's always got an open door to Total Rally, of course, and yeah. As you made your name in rallying, and you're now flirting with Rallycross. In fact, I think it's probably more of a,
said with Rallycross.
Yes. I know your missus is listening, it's all right.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's more of a flirt now into a full blown loving, I think, we'd Rallycross, because for those of you who are not aware, who are listening to the show, Guy made his World Rallycross debut at the weekend in a JRM run mini World Rallycross car, and I don't know what your expectations were, Guy. All cards on the table. I genuinely, you know, I'm involved in Rallycross, and I really didn't know where you were going to be. Cards on the table. Where did you think you were going to be?
I didn't have a clue, but obviously I went out to Hockenheim a couple of weeks before, a few weeks before, and saw Danny Way and Dave Murrah, who respectively in their own sports are superstars. Dave Murrah has done a lot more in terms of rallycross than Danny Way. Obviously Danny Way is a superstar skateboarder, and Dave Murrah was an absolute legend of a BMX rider. But Dave Murrah had had some sort of rise into rallying and rallycross with Subaru America. But yeah, I mean, I saw the car out in Hockenheim, and after that, I really didn't know what to expect myself. And the thing was, from my point of view, I wanted to get involved in motorsport again. And rallycross is a much better fit for me now in the life that I lead. And me being realistic about the opportunity of getting back into rallying at the top level, because that's all I would be interested in. I'm not sort of a somebody that goes and spectates or who would go and buy a historic car. It's just not me. I do every sport to compete really as hard as I can. But yeah, to answer your question, Tony, I mean, I was hoping. We could fight to make the semi-finals. That's what I was really hoping for. But after we did the test on last Monday, a week ago, I didn't know, because we went to test in Pembrey in South Wales. I was going to say deepest, darkest, but it's not really deep and dark. It's on the coastline.
It's quite nice. I'll be honest with you. I did the coverage down there 2 weeks ago, and it's like going to Narnia and turning left. It just seems to take forever to get there.
Oh, it does. I flew down to Cardiff. I mean, I live in northeast England, near Newcastle. I live in Durham. And I decided to fly down there. I'm so pleased, because, I mean, driving down for Reckies to Swansea, or should I say for Rally Wales GB to Swansea to start Reckies, you know, 6 hours, 6.5 hours in a car. And then Pembrey is another probably 45 minutes, 50 minutes on from that. So I didn't fancy that. But It was a total opposite to what you had the week before. It was absolutely howling.
Really?
Cats and dogs it was. So we didn't really test in the dry like it was at Lydon. So that was another thing. And you know, Pembrey is in, it's not very technical on the tarmac. The gravel section is the most technical part. It's a complete opposite to Lydon Hill, but it's the only place we could test the car. So I was massively apprehensive for myself in the car, for myself in Rallycross. You know, I haven't competed for 3 years in anything. So yeah, to say I was comfortable would be telling you a lie.
Yeah. Did it help? Obviously, I know you've worked with JRM before. They ran the Mitsubishi program here in the UK when you were the factory driver for Mitsubishi UK. Is there a lot of familiar faces there? Because I know JRM's gone through a huge upheaval from those days. Was the people still there that were familiar?
They not from my days, but from rallying. Yes, I mean a lot. JRM a massively professional private team. They've picked up a lot of personnel from Pro Drive in terms of towards the rally effort there that they have, the Group N rally cars they build, and also the minis that they bought and now have, and the Rallycross cars. They were obviously built by Pro Drive, engineered and designed by Paul Eastman, and Paul Eastman now works at JRM, as do you know, ex team from Pro Drive. It's a heavily professional team now, JRM, and obviously it's very early days for their Rallycross program. But in terms of racing, I mean, they're right up there with GT3. They sort of bought, as you know, the old ADR Mitsubishi Rally team, and then they've James Rumsey, who owns the team, has sort of steered it through the last, I don't know, maybe 8 years, and it went more towards to racing at a very high level. And they still are there, but now Rallycross is on their radar and the team's expanding massively.
I was just about to ask you, it seems like almost too obvious question, and I know the answer, but I've got to ask you, what happens next?
Good question. A big meeting. Like I said, I mean, the team are absolutely massively buoyed and overjoyed by the fact that we got to the final. We haven't really touched on the weekend and what happened, but we went to Lydon Hill with, like I said, I think we all, well, I know we all hoped we could make the semis, and if we did, we'd be happy. We made the semis, and we had a good run, a really good run. I mean, it's a 1600 car, okay, we get it, you know, but probably a lot of listeners don't. It's the only 1600 car. There are 1800 cars that run in Rallycross, or World Rallycross, or British Rallycross. But generally, they're all 2 litre cars with between 550 and 600 brake horsepower. You know, we were running a 1600 engine, which is less than that on power, but we get a weight advantage. But you know, we still punched above our weight, and so we made the semis, but we were testing the car in the event. We were changing the setup all the time, which, as you know, at the top level, it does happen because the track evolves. With it being gravel, it cleans, or they push more gravel back into place and repair the track. So there's lots of things that you can actually be tinkering with, and it is that fine adjustment that makes the difference, definitely. But we were just, you know, the big boys like Petter and the VW teams, they're working back and forth with the track. We were just working forwards because the car has been developed. So we were making decent inroads every run, although sometimes, I must admit, we were sort of tongue-in-cheek whether it was going to be a positive step or not. And generally, with the experience that I have, and Paul Eastman has and knows the car very well, and the rest of the team, we generally kept the ball moving in the right direction and ended up in the final, which was unexpected and massive achievement. When I look back at it now, I was sort of wrapped up in it and staying level headed at the time, but when we because we made the final, and in Rallycross, to explain to your harder rally fans, that basically they run a circuit, but then around that, depending on if you're in heats or in a final, you have to do a joker lap. So you might have a 6 lap race in the final, but one of those laps has to be completed around a joker lap, which is usually a slightly longer lap. Can be a shorter lap, but usually a slightly longer lap. to mix the racing up a little bit like DRS in Formula One, but it is really, really interesting as when you take it. A lot of strategy, but in the final, I took the Joker lap straight away from the start and ended up coming off the jump, and I think we pushed the tyre off the rim and ended up with a puncture. So for me, it was just so, I was going to use the word deflating, but I paused and tried to get it.
You could have got away with it, mate.
It was just a sad way for the weekend to end. But when I look back at it now, it was a massive achievement. I mean, there's pretty much, I would say, 15 cars and drivers in the paddock that can win those events. And I mean it. I know Petter ends up there most of the time, but really, there is 15 other drivers in there that can hustle him all the way to the finish line.
Well, and I think places like Lyddon as well, and again, it's the spiritual home of Rallycross for those who remember yesteryear. That's where Rallycross really began in this country. And you know, you've got people like Liam Duran, who's obviously Petter's teammate now. His dad owns that circuit. You know, yeah. He knows it inside out and back to front. You've got Julian Godfrey, who was there as well, who's a 4-time British champion, and Julian's no slouch either, by the way. So to go there, and it pains me to do this, guy, because as much as I like you, you big yourself up far better than what I could ever big you up. But the respect I've got for you to go and mix it with those boys now, I'm working in it professionally, so I see it from a very different pair of eyes. And you know, you went there and took on the best, mate, and that's what you've got to remember.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think that's what it was. It doesn't matter what I do. I mean, I used to play other sports at a pretty high level, and I always tried my hardest, and I always will. That's the sort of mentality I have. I was going to say too competitive. I am just competitive. That's it. End of story. And, I went there, and even though, like you said, you didn't know what to expect, neither did I, but I did know one thing, and I was going to try my hardest, and that was as simple as that. And, I think when we look back now to see what we achieved and the way we achieved it with the sort of professionalism that the whole team had along with it was a fantastically good weekend. And like I said, where do we go from here now? Or should I say, where do we go from here now? We've got to have a big meeting because the car is in the early stages of development. You know, there's a lot of question marks that we need to get ironed out. And as a lot of your listeners will know, you know, big teams, they test, you know, away from the rally, the race, behind closed doors almost to a certain extent, to make sure they've got, every last ounce out of the car. But we're going to have a big meeting and, probably a brainstorming session, should we say. And then who knows, you know, it could be soon. I don't know. But, you know, I don't know what the team have got planned short term. I know what they want to do long term. But, they were pretty much against it the whole way from Germany to get the car ready and other bits and pieces that they were developing along the way between the car doing Germany and Lyddon. So, yeah. Big meeting, that's what's planned, but I'd love to get out in some more rallycross events.
I have to ask, and you know, I only know you from a rally background. I know obviously, you know, your personal business and stuff up in the northeast. Obviously you've got the car track and stuff like that. Have you done much racing before?
No, never.
Okay.
Never done any racing. I didn't kart when I was young. I played under 16 county cricket for Durham, under 16 county cricket squash for Durham again. Rugby wasn't quite good enough to make county, but that did that.
Damn.
But I missed that one up on my radar. I've got three brothers, and the two middle ones were very competitive. I got cricket and squash, and he got rugby, and had England trials actually at rugby. But so he definitely beat me at that one. But I'd never done karting or anything, so it does go to show you can actually do it. You don't need to be beating yourself up if you don't get the opportunity to go karting. I was definitely sort of late coming to motorsport, but definitely no racing, absolutely not. Although rallying's always going to be my heart. It always will be, and it always was from a young age. But I always, as I sort of got through my rallying career, I actually had an opportunity to do rallycross probably about 2005, but I wasn't sure if the car was going to be good enough. And at that point, I was with Suzuki, and I wasn't sure if they would allow me to do it. So I'd never even asked the question because I knew the car wasn't good enough. well, in my mind, the car wasn't good enough. And I, like I said, I always want to win.
Absolutely. So,
but, yeah, I mean, this is a different ball game. This is about, you know, a team being built and developing a car, you know, and with the professionalism that JRM have, you know, I have no doubt that it will come good. You know, as for a timeline, I don't know. But, yeah, I hope to be part of it, or at least part of Rallycross. You know, it's I've had my eyes open to it. I've always liked it, but the level that the World Rally Championship, World Rallycross Championship is now, that really has a big draw for me, because, you know, it's very professional. It's getting more professional. There's more manufacturers looking at it. There's some really good sponsors, and like I said, it fits my life now. You know, I've got a family. I've got a business that needs looking after as well. Obviously, there's family that needs looking after. Rallying is a massively stressful sport at the top level, you know, and there is a high level of risk. You know, yes, there's risk in all motorsport, but I would say rallying is pretty much top of the tree.
How did you find switching on and switching off again between heats and things like that?
Easy. It came back to me unbelievably easy. I was, like I said, I was definitely apprehensive about it. The whole thing, just because I've not competed in that, and I do doubt myself a little bit sometimes, but not in a negative way. It's come on, you've got to prove yourself. You've got no laurels to rest on here. You know, you're starting again, and that's how I don't talk to myself too much, but I just have a quiet word in my ear as such, and say, you know, come on, do it. Prove to them that you can still do it, and you know, that's pretty much all it was. But with the rallycross, it is literally on and off. You know, you have to step into the uniform and out of the uniform, if you like. It's helmet off, helmet on, helmet off, you know. And rallying was very much the same. It's, you know, when you come to stages, even though you're driving the car in the road section, you need to be alert, but not at the level, obviously, that you're in a stage. So to turn on and off, it just came very, very naturally.
Good man. Listen, I want you to stay in touch, and I'm sure I'll probably see you at some rallycross events. But before you go, while I've got you, I know you were probably a little bit busy at the weekend, but did you see anything of Portugal?
I did bits and pieces. I was trying to chase, because, you know, do you know how many brilliant Scandinavians there are in rallycross? I was trying to keep a track of it. I know there's probably a load of the question. What are you going to talk about? Sebastian Ogier's comments.
Yes. I was going to ask you about that.
I've read his statement on Twitter, and then I've not had the chance to find out what he actually said to camera, but my honest opinion was, I know him, obviously, personally, I know him. And I don't know what he said, but I know exactly what he means. And sometimes, I myself, even when I've had time to think about it, I say something, you know, when you're trying to talk in detail, but you're trying to make sure that you get it straight. You could talk about it in a technical language, but sometimes you try to make it, you know, easy to understand, and sometimes it can be misconstrued. And I thought, he's said something here, and it's been taken as quite derogatory about, obviously, Yari winning, I would guess. I really don't know what he said, but judging from his statement that he said something at the end of the stage, I would guess about, I don't know, is it about him running first on the road or something? I don't know.
It was effectively, I'm paraphrasing ever so slightly, but everybody is happy here today. I am happy for the result, but the fastest man didn't win today.
Ah, right, okay.
I'm paraphrasing ever so slightly.
I don't know what happened. I didn't see all the results. So what happened? Obviously, I know you might want to get on, but I'm really intrigued by this, because I saw somebody you make a statement on their Twitter before, and I thought, right, okay, I don't just want to talk about rallycross. I want to know what's going on here. So I apologise to anybody I might be holding up, but let's get to the bottom. So Yari Matti set off, and he was winning to start with because he had a good road position. I saw that, and Sebastian was opening the road. Yes.
Yes.
So the end of the first day, Yari Matti was winning. Sebastian was,
I think Sebastian was down in fifth. I think it was at the time, maybe sixth.
And how far off the pace?
It wasn't a million miles. We're talking, you know, probably 50 seconds or something like that.
and just a steady time loss, it was quite obvious that he'd been losing that running first on the road.
Yes.
And then on the second day, it was reseeded. So I don't even know how World Championship.
Yeah, well, you've got the cars that Super Rally that were going in front of him, and unfortunately, what he probably his best friends were the lads who had the Super Rally. So Elvin Evans and Biatelli and another driver whose name escapes me at the moment, they were running in front of him, and then Biatelli and Evans went after him. But he was playing catch up from there on in. But it looked comfortable. He said he was going hard, but it looked comfortable. And
his driving style looked comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah,
you don't think he was pushing?
He said he was pushing. He said he was going hard, and he was very canny with his tyre selections. And
did he make any headway back on the second day?
Yes, he did. So, right. But I think.
And Yari Matti was how many cars behind him?
That I don't know. Without checking, you've put me on the spot now. Thanks, mate.
Yeah. No worries. I'm just trying to get to the bottom of it as well, because I thought I'll ask you all of this tonight because it's.
Well, you need to go and check it out, because I need to go and get my other guest, because I'm going to run out of time.
Yeah, no worries. I think that having known Sebastian, and I the last time I saw him was actually Rally Day, was it last year or year before? Can't remember, one of them. he's a lovely guy. He's just ultra competitive. He's a little bit like myself. Obviously, he's proven himself a bit quicker at rallying, in the situations that he's had. But he's a nice guy, and to be honest, I think he just dropped one. He dropped a ball, should we say. And he probably didn't mean it to come out as he said it.
No, he's tidied it up and everything else, and he said it wasn't a slant on Yari. It was my frustration and me trying to make a point. So it wasn't left like that. But I think everybody's shock was the fact that the way it was said at the end of stage end. But I started the show, and I actually quite I like people who say things at stage end. I want to see a personality, and you can't cry out wanting personalities and not get things that you don't want to hear. Sometimes
I once got told off, actually, just very very quickly by my team manager at the end of Rally Turkey one year. I got pitched against a World Rally car on a Super Special stage, and ended up going into basically a ditch that was on the Super Special stage, and because I was driving in dust, couldn't see where I was going. I was leading the Rally Turkey anyway, ended up finishing third, I think. So I finished on the podium, third or fourth. Anyway, I had a face as long as a horse at the end of the rally. And Risto Line, my old team manager, he said to me, he says, what do you have, you're happy about? The rally could have finished there. Whereas that was a good way of looking at it. I was looking at it in a negative way but I could have been fighting for the win. But the person who used to run the Junior World Championship, Nino Risto, said, Risto, he said, the man has pride. He has pride. And so that comes back to what you're saying.
Yeah.
He has the desire and he has the will to win. That is better than being happy with fourth. So
absolutely.
Third, whatever it was. But I completely agree with him. From all drivers' point of view, we want a clean, fair. The unfortunate thing with rallying is there will always be a road sweeping element.
Absolutely.
Regardless.
On that note, I'm gonna leave you. Listen, Guy. Hopefully we'll catch up soon, mate. Hopefully I'll see you at some events as well. But thank you so much for joining us. Well done again, mate. It really, really was cracking drive. Well done, mate.
It was nice to be back.
All right. Cheers, see you soon. Take care. Thanks, Guy.
Thanks, bye.
Cheers, mate. Bye bye. And that was Guy Wilkes, ladies and gentlemen. So, without further ado, Dan, welcome to Total Rally.
Thanks for having me.
It's been a weird old time, because I've been dying to get you on the show. We've known each other for a while from British Championship days, and before we get into Portugal, I wanted to very, very quickly just speak to you about a couple of things, because for me, you kind of came from nowhere. I remember you being a very, very quick boy in a Mark II Escort. And you got quite a lot of notoriety over in Ireland, and then out the blue, you turned up in the British Rally Championship in a modern car and started blowing people away. What happened? I know it's a very odd question to ask to start off, but what happened? Where did you make the decision that going from driving a very quick historic car to actually trying to make a go of this?
Yeah, it was back in the Donegal International Rally in 2010. We were battling with David Bogie in a Metro 6R4 for the National Rally win, and trying quite hard, and unbeknownst to us at the time, we were actually matching and beating drivers such as Keith Cronin and Craig Breen and ST1000 Fiestas and GRM Evo 10s, as you were just talking about GRM at the time. And we sort of said, maybe it's time to play and stop having some fun here and see if we can take it maybe more seriously. So it was sort of that one rally, and I suppose a build up of a few rallies before that, that we sort of decided we'll have a crack at the BRC. The Pirelli Star Driver Award was what I had my sights set on, and it looked like the most accessible thing to us, you know, as to try and become a sort of a professional or semi-professional driver. And we went to the Ulster Rally then in an Evo 9, a rented Evo 9, and thankfully we had a good enough performance that day to get a nomination and a yellow jacket. And then we backed it up then by going to the Track Road Rally, the next to last round of the championship, and we finished fourth overall. And the first time rallying out of Ireland, and first time rallying left-hand drive on gravel and four-wheel drive. And we were, you know, we had set ourselves up well for the Pirelli Star Driver Shootout. And so there was good pride in coming away from that, knowing that we'd, you know, done a good job. And I had no shame in saying that Elfin Evans won that day, but I'm sure that we left there with our heads held high, and we were competitive, you know. And as you know, Elfin went on to do bigger and better things.
He's done all right, hasn't he?
Yeah. So it's nice to be able to say, like, I competed with the likes of these guys at the same level, and didn't shame myself. But it sort of got quiet then after that. I finished my degree in mechanical engineering. Was struggling to get work with the recession and stuff here in Ireland, and I actually done a spell working over in London for a couple of months, and then we ended up coming back here to my father's business. And slowly but surely we got back into rallying again, and using the Mark II we got won the Billy Coleman Award, and it was sort of the Billy Coleman Award that brought us back to the British Championship in 2014 using the Fiesta. And again, my sights were set on the Pirelli Star Driver Award, and we had a sort of a plan in place if we could get that prize drive and then try and use that to win the British Championship. So I'm glad to say the last two seasons have went exactly to plan. And the next step of the jigsaw, or the next step of the, was the junior world championship, which is what we're at now. So sort of gets us up to date quickly.
I was just about to say that was clearly, you know, last season. Obviously we've had no BRC this season. That's a different conversation for a different day. But was this always gearing towards going JWRC? Was that another reason as well? It was important to be in a DS3.
Yeah, it was. To be honest with you. There was a clear stepping stone there. We've seen that Keith Cronin had good success in 2013, and Alistair Fisher as well. And obviously Craig Breen had won the Junior Academy with the Fiestas, but then, and Elfin had won as well the following year. But then it switched to Citroens, and it looked like it was going to be staying with Citroen. So it was logical, the fact that I had spent a year in the British Championship in a Citroen, to continue on in that vein. And and the prize that's on offer, obviously, if you win the junior championship, brings you to the R5 level. And you know, it's just, again, this natural progression and stepping stone system that the FIA has sort of brought out a number of years ago, coming from R1 right up to R5. And I suppose we've made best use of the limited funding we've had, and so far it's worked quite well. Now we're struggling a wee bit this year with our performances on the bigger events, and I suppose it's a lack of experience, but we're working on it all the time, you know.
What's obviously we'll come to Portugal. Portugal looked like we spoke to Dan Barrett before. Obviously, he was in with Elfin, and you know, he was giving, you know, his feedback on the event and everything else. It looked like a very, very tough event for a four-wheel drive car. What was it like for a front-wheel drive car?
Yeah, it was extremely tough. Nobody really knew what to expect until we landed to the P3 test on Monday. The P3 test was quite a lot of cars there. A lot of the WRC2 competitors were out for the first time, were using the same piece of road, and the road very, very quickly deteriorated. It went from like a smooth polished surface and looked like a really good stage to within about three runs, it was just, you know, we're dealing with foot deep ruts, and the car was bottoming out. And it was then we realised that this is not going to be a flat-out approach rally. It was going to be a finisher rally, and you needed to use the noggin. You needed to use the head to get to the finish and hopefully collect good points. And so even after the recce, like, you could even see the stages starting to cut up even on the recce in places. And I actually spoke to Chris Meek and Paul Nagel on Wednesday evening after the recce, like, you know, and he was saying, geez, the Wild Rough, you know, Wild Rough stages. And Chris started laughing at me. He says, when you come from Argentina, he says, this rally's like a tarmac rally, to be honest, Daniel. You know, this is nothing compared to what we have to deal with in some rallies. And I was a wee bit shocked. But I was quite aware that we were the R3 cars were going to struggle, especially in the second pass. So, and I think everyone expected that as well, and we were right. But yeah, our game plan was just to take it nice and steady. We didn't do anything silly. We got a wee bit of bad luck right from the very start, which is nobody's fault really. It's just the rules and regulations where we were seated behind the slower car in front of us right from the start, and we knew we were going to have some issues with dust. And thankfully, the organisers noticed that we were taking a good bit of time out of the car, and you know, adjusted the gap at the start of the stage accordingly. We actually got up to 4 minutes, but because the stage was cancelled with the forest fire, the first stage in the loop was cancelled. We rerouted the start of stage six, and all the cars actually gathered up at the start line, so the 4 minute gap was reduced back to the normal 2 minutes, and we went into that stage actually sitting second overall behind Tempestini. And the stage was very, very rough, and sure enough, we come up. Tempestini was on a big charge, I think, and he pulled a wheel off, which sort of promoted us into the lead. But a couple of kilometres later then, we had our dust problem again, and unfortunately, I was struggling just to keep me cool behind the car, because obviously I knew we were hemorrhaging time, and we were in the lead. And then a couple of kilometres later, after driving quite slowly in the dust and getting very frustrated, I made a mistake and just came in too fast into square 8. I couldn't actually see where I was going, to be honest, and I dropped the car into a drain. Unfortunately, in the drain it was a concrete gully, and we ended up breaking a wishbone and the drive shaft and the steering rack, and that was us out of the rally. I had to go rally 2 then, so very, very frustrating, as you can imagine. And to know that we were there, to know that we were in the hunt for the win, which was very badly needed. It was very frustrating to know it was there for the taking for us, and our approach was working, because I think everyone had the same game plan, but up to that point we seemed to be executing it better than anyone, because obviously we were ahead of all of our competitors, you know. So just very frustrating there, and still quite upset about the whole thing at the moment. But we got back out on Saturday morning, and we said we have to get a finish now, trying to get points on the board. So we started at 11th, we got up as far as 6th at one point, but with punctures and a few other problems with the suspension and stuff, just because the stages were so rough, we dropped back to 8th. So certainly not what we wanted, but better than having no finish at all, like some of the other competitors.
Absolutely. Well, it's all about scoring points, Daniel. And listen, we're actually very, very quickly running out of time, so I apologise. We're going to have to cut this a little bit shorter, but I would love to. What's the next round for you guys?
Yeah, so we've elected to not nominate Poland. So unfortunately, we're not back on the game again until Finland.
Wow!
So the championship's sort of out of our hands.
Let's try and get you before Finland. Let's have a proper chat leading up to Finland.
Yeah, no problem.
All right, Dan.
Come back. Yeah.
Listen, mate. Well battled, and I feel for you. And we'll catch up very soon. You look after yourself.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks.
Cheers. Thanks, Dan. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
And that was Dan McKenna, who is ace. He's a top, top lad. And, you know, it sounds like he had a tough, well, it sounds like most of the people had a tough rally Portugal, apart from the top boys. But anyway, that's unfortunately the end of Total Rally for another week. It's been a busy old show, and I've been on my own again. We've got a mega show, by the way, next week. We're going to be doing something from Rally Barbados. We're also going to have Hayden Padden on as well, so we're going to try and chill out a little bit next week, because it's Barbados and we're not going to rush things. So we're going to give Hayden a little bit of a run in the park, and we spoke about Hayden before, and we're also hoping to get some of the guys who are doing Rally Barbados from one of the bars over there, because that's where Ryan is, and I'm in Manchester in a studio. Take from that what you will. Listen, my name's been Tony Simpson. You know where we live, at Total Rally, and of course facebook.com/Total Rally. If you want to tweet me personally, it's at TonySimpson74. But thank you all so much for listening. Thank you all so much for tweeting in and sending in your questions, and we will catch you very, very, very soon.